Our statutory authority to write off accounts is 305 ORS 305 155, and we write off accounts generally because there are either there are no assets that we can reach to satisfy the debt, or we have determined that further collection and action wouldn't be cost effective, and we've documented it. And each one of these accounts that's written off is, like I say, documented, and the record, the documentary records are microfilmed and we are retained permanently in the department's file.
Are these records in the form, are these percentages from the dollar amount or from the number of accounts?
From the number of accounts.
Number of accounts. Does the dollar amount, will the percentage in dollar amount terms be roughly the same?
Did you do that on the...
Yeah, I can address that. Yes, Senator Powell, when you talk about dollars now, if you look like that first item, economic value, too small to be cost effective, you know, 34% of those 156 taxpayers fell into that, but probably the dollar volume was pretty small. Those are mostly the $100 and less type of accounts. Whereas if you look at maybe a insolvent defunct corporation, why, the dollar amount of those accounts would probably be much larger.
Yeah. It seems like the most... Yeah. Relevant figure to this committee would be those percentages in dollar terms by category as opposed to the number of accounts.
Mr. Chairman, we could make that analysis.
Yeah, I would like to. Is that a lot of work?
I don't think it's prohibitive.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Farley. Go down to the next category and tell me what in the world that is, withholding not assessed to responsible officer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator McFarland, in the income tax law, we have withholding provisions, and for where the employer is a corporation or a partnership, the officers are the partners in the business, have a personal liability for withholding tax that is taken out of employees' checks and is not turned over to the state. And when the business becomes defunct, goes bankrupt or whatever,
category above.
The law gives us authority to assert that liability and collect it from the responsible officer after we determine who the responsible officer is. Now, this 3.6% in this sample would be cases where we've either have made the determination as to who the responsible officer is, and that officer is outside our jurisdiction, or we have made the determination that it wouldn't be cost-effective to go after the responsible officer for the.
So, in actual fact, this title is a little bit misleading, and it says that you didn't assess them to the responsible officer. Maybe you assessed them to him, but you can't get it.
Well, I. Yes, ma'am, that could be, but the reason why we didn't assess it would be because we made a judgment decision. That
yeah,
it,
that it would right. You'd be unable to get it.
Right.
Okay. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, just a comment. I'm not suggesting that you change your policy or anything, but it is a little bit disturbing to me that a person can get away with stealing from the government as long as they only steal small amounts. Small amount being defined as something less than $100, whereas if a person went into a grocery store and walked out with $60 or $70 out of the till, they'd be in a heap of trouble. Or if they stole somebody's radio out of their car, they got caught, they'd be in a heap of trouble. I don't know. It seems like, again, that something that we've all seen in our society, that so-called white-collar crime is treated differently than other kinds of crime, even when the amounts, values are the same. Nothing we can do about it, perhaps, but I just have to get that off my chest.
Feel better.
Yeah, I feel better. Thank you, I appreciate it.
On page 5, Mr. Chairman, I've given you an up-to-date report on our special collection project that the special session asked us to undertake. And I'll be glad to answer any questions on it, but the bottom line is that at the end of January 1981, we had reached 52.9% of the goal that we set for the 10-month period beginning in September 1980. And as a comparison, in the immediately preceding year, the same 10-month period, at the end of January, we had collected 41.5% of the amount that we would eventually collect in that period. And so we're real pleased with the progress.
So you don't think that you've collected the easiest first?
We do feel some of the easiest accounts we have collected first, but the accounts keep coming into the system, and we feel that we will be able to keep up with the more in dollar collections than we did in the base period there, and we will be able to reach our goal. As I said before, we have 34 full-time positions that have been loaned to us from other areas in the department for this project. And we've also done a couple of things in our collection process to strengthen the collection activity, such as speeding up the actual billing of delinquent, issuing billings to delinquent taxpayers when their delinquency is identified, and also in assigning these accounts to our revenue agents for collection, and in issuing judgments and levying on property. We've speeded up this process. As I mentioned before, the department does plan to ask for an amendment to existing legislation or existing proposed legislation for authority to use outside collection agencies, and there are a couple other areas that we're planning to ask for law change to strengthen our collection program. One is a change in ORS 192, the laws relating to banking, to give financial institutions the authority to advise the department as to whether or not they hold assets that can be levied on to satisfy our tax liens. We have discussed this with the Banking Division of the Department of Commerce, but we still have to get back to them and discuss it further with them to make sure that we're in agreement, they're in agreement with us that this change will be a good one. And the other change is a change in the Employment Division secrecy provisions. That's ORS Chapter 657 to provide authority for the Employment Division to give the Department of Revenue information from employer records that will aid us in locating individual employees and their employers, so that we can make use of that in levying on wages and so forth to collect delinquent taxes.
Have you ever asked for that before?
We have asked for this, I think, in the 79 session, and it wasn't passed.
I say it sounds familiar.
Yeah, right. I think it got out of committee.
One thing about most agencies, they always bring it back. There's always another time, isn't there?
Right. Another time.
Agencies and PUDs just keep coming back. Sarah Monroe.
Where's the legislation that would allow you to get outside help for out-of-state collections?
We have that. It's going to be proposed as an amendment to Senate Bill 65.
To a Senate bill. Oh, that's good, because...
Is that strict construction?
64.
I was going to say, maybe we're finding that vehicle.
I'm glad to hear that it's going to be dealt with on the Senate side, because we don't have too much to do over here right now anyway.
That's a good comment.
65 is up tomorrow.
Right.
If that's the bill you want to attach.
Well, we're sitting on our hands waiting for the bill.
We'll have the amendments prepared. Do whatever you want.
We've got some special ideas for you.
That include a motion to table, George?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Not that.
Senator Gerstead?
Well, Mr. Chairman, during the interim, and I think this might be the place to ask this question, there was a kind of phenomena reported, and I was new on the committee, and I don't know the process of, or what the follow-up could be, but it dealt with a considerable size of money where there was actually a fraud going on in withholding, and it dealt mostly to do with corporations and workers that were maybe temporarily in the state, usually in heavy construction, and the fellow might be making a good healthy salary, so he'd put in for eight or nine kids, non-existent children, but he named them. And so there wouldn't be any withholding. And
it probably hasn't.
And then down he'd leave. And the state would never, the money wouldn't be withheld, and so he was getting off tax-free. That was quite a problem, if I recall.
I read a bill on that.
And I just wonder what can be done about it, or if the department has anything to suggest, or if anybody's given it any thought.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jernstep, it is a problem, and we have recognized the problem, and the department has promulgated a rule that requires an employer to notify the department when an employee files a W-4, which is the exemption certificate, right, claiming more than 9 exemptions.
Judas Priest, but you get by. I don't even have that many.
That'll take care of Ken, but the rest of us have a lot of leeway.
I don't even have that many, but
we've been working in tandem with IRS on this project, and we have identified quite a few people.
Isn't that awfully high? 9?
There is a representative from our audit department here that might comment on, and I believe he testified on this in maybe to the interim committee.
Well, that's where I picked it
up. Maybe he could give a shuttle.
Families are a little smaller now.
Ken, the people that travel in construction from town to town probably have more kids than they can count.
This is Jim Brown. He's one of the supervisors from our audit division.
Senator Jernstep, you have to realize that you can claim exemptions for other things besides children. Anytime you have greater than the normal amount of tax write-offs because of business losses or anticipate such tax losses, you can claim added exemptions. Exemptions don't necessarily mean that you're claiming that many children or that many physical dependents, people that are dependent on you.
Yes,
there are other types of exemptions.
That's true, but if you are going to have that withholding and you're in the state for a year and you know you're only going to be here a year and they're not going to be able to catch up with you, the state will never get that money.
Yeah. The point is well taken, but in order to do this, you don't have to name any fictitious children or anything. You can just simply claim that you anticipate tax losses from other sources and claim exemptions on that basis. If you do it fraudulently, though, it's illegal.
I think this is two different things we're talking about.
Well, you can claim exemptions for two things. You can claim exemptions for dependents, and you can claim other exemptions.
Yeah, but that W-4 is just for dependents.
Some of us go the other route. If you're in a business, one of you is on withholding, the other is in a business that's filing a joint return, some of you don't take any exemptions at all because you know you're going to have a liability on
right.
the combined income.
Okay, do you want to respond to the numbers game?
Yes.
There are smaller families. Oregon isn't having a population boom.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Jernstep, I think that the 9 didn't shock me too much because I've seen them with 450 and larger numbers of exemptions claimed. The real problem is not with people that claim 6 to 9 and have a smaller amount of tax withheld. The real problem is people claiming to be
going
to work either exempt withholding or a large number of withholding exemptions, and their intention is to avoid having any tax withheld on their income.
Okay.
And we have seen a large number of these in the last 2 years in Oregon, and it continues to be a very large number. We're working. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I thought I saw a bill, maybe I didn't, giving some control over the Department of Revenue and giving instruction where employers had to give some screening process to the type of exemption. Maybe I didn't. I thought I read that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, I think that's in the department's rule, isn't it? You may be.
Yeah, could be.
The problem that we had, Senator Day, was that one of the problems is that the employer was being caught in the middle, and our law was vague at best to get the employer out of that situation. The employee has filed a certificate that says, I want you to withhold tax based on my 49 exemptions that I claim. The Department of Revenue has come in and said the individual has not verified that he's entitled to that many exemptions, and under the law you have to withhold as if he's single with 0 exemptions until such time as he files a proper certificate. So the employer is being pulled at from two sides. We proposed a bill to clarify that in the last session. That bill was attached, as I remember, to some other legislation that didn't pass. At that time, we felt it was necessary for us to do something to get the employer out of the situation, and we proposed an administrative rule that did essentially what the legislation would have done. I think we were erroneous in the fact that we asked for legislation in the first place, and we testified at the Joint Interim Revenue Committee and had some questions on that.
Mr. Chairman, we have, Senator, today, several cases now, and when I say several, I mean at least three, where the employer, we've instructed the employer to allow the employee only one exemption or no exemptions, and the employer now has filed an interpleader, I think you call it, with the Oregon Tax Court to have the court tell the employer what to do with the money. The employee is telling the employer not to withhold, and we're telling the employer to withhold, and so the employer is going to the tax court to get this clarified, and maybe we'll get some clarification as to where we stand on that.
How many millions are we talking about per year? I forget, six?
It's really a difficult question because what we do is, as soon as we become aware that somebody has filed for 10 or more exemptions, we compare it to a prior year's return if one's available. If it's not, we meet with the individual or attempt to meet with them to get them to verify what they're claiming. If they can't do that, we immediately tell the employer to withhold it at single zero, which is in the law. At that point, there's withholding taken out again. So usually it's only maybe a month period that the employee goes with no withholding. So if we didn't take this approach and we allowed these withholding certificates to go on, there'd be a lot of money involved. But the way we approach it, I think we keep it to a minimum. Part of the problem in transient occupations is they'll come in and work in a construction site in Oregon. They'll work for a month with no withholding. The first paycheck they get with withholding, because the Department of Revenue has notified the employer to withhold, that first, as soon as they get that first paycheck, they quit, go back out of state to the union hall and get reassigned somewhere else. And those are very, very difficult.
I know that goes on between the Columbia River, and you do the back and forth on the pipeline construction project on the dams, and we see that all the time.
We were seeing in the neighborhood of, from one employer at the coal plant they were building in Boardman, we were getting about 150 exempt W-4s a month. People claiming to be exempt from coal, mostly Washington residents.
Other questions? Apparently, then, cheating is much more of a problem than collecting in dollar terms.
I think they're both a problem, and I'm not sure that I know which is the biggest problem, Mr. Chairman.
And, well, it appears that your biggest problem may well be those who have conspired to avoid paying a liability.
And
in essence, it is a cheat form of cheating. It's just, I guess, a little bit more bravo or a little bit more courage involved in simply letting you know they exist but then running away versus not admitting to the liability at all or not being put in a position where they can find that liability. So on the one hand, you have those who can shelter the information that you get, and on the other hand, you have those who have to find a different way to cheat. And so that appears to be the biggest problem. Senator Trill.
I think I asked this last time, but I think it's still pertinent, because we're concentrating staff in collecting these delinquent payments, and we're using a group of people who are auditors and audits. And are we likely to gain money on the one hand and to lose money on the other hand? I think you said that before. And isn't it true that if we use the auditors to do the collections, that we may, on the cheating end of it, really not catch some of that, and therefore lose a lot of revenue?
Mr. Chairman.
That would show up in the next biennium.
Yes, sir. You're right.
Is there any way of knowing how much that will be eventually, so we can put it on one hand and say, well, we raised money over here, but over here we lost money, and so we know whether it's effective.
Yes, sir, we can estimate that, and I believe the audit division has worked up some figures on I told you the other day that there were 20, I said approximately 20 positions. I found out later that there were 18 auditors that have been assigned to the collection division, and our audit division, I believe, has projected the loss of revenue from lack of billing production that those auditors would have had.
How much would that be?
I'll let Jim respond to that.
I think we estimate it would be probably around $900,000 to $1 million in direct billings that these auditors would have written in this 10-month period. There's really we have no really good way that I know of estimating the what we call a ripple effect of auditors being out there working on.
But you can say this is $900,000 or so, almost $1 million. That's directly related to.
Yeah,
this.
Those would be direct billings.
There'd be the ripple effect in addition, which is not as you can't really find out for sure what that's going to be.
Yes.
The ripple effect comes partly, Mr. Chairman, from just decreasing the level of our compliance work.
Sure. Do you think that'll amount to more than the actual money we can see? Is that going to be three times that?
I don't believe. I think since the speed up is designed to be a 10-month period, I think that temporary absence of that audit staff for 10
you'll
months.
You'll get your audit staff back online fairly quickly, right. Especially if you get additional help to do the collections, then you can use your auditors and everything. So there will be some effect, but it's still cost effective what we're doing.
Any other collection problems that you think we should address besides the three bills that are and amendments that you're.
Mr. Chairman, we think that that's all that we can come up with right now that we need to strengthen our program. We do have, we have adequate authority in the law to do our collection work with the need for these conditions. And we have a well-trained staff, we believe, and we think that we're on top of the thing, and eventually we will.
Well, we'll check on that interrogatory question as well, so that we are sure what has been done in the past. Anybody else have questions for Ms. Emily? Seeing none, thank you very much for your time. Is there anybody else here that wants to talk about collections? Seeing none, we'll meet here again tomorrow at 1:30. We have some bill. Let's see. Tomorrow is bills 65 and... Yeah, we have the one on strict construction and... then a bill that the department has in at 65, which is a general income tax bill, I believe.
What's that one that deals with property tax exemptions for
strict construction? That's a can of worms. Yeah, somebody told me they're going to move it. I would imagine that may be successful. But we have an AG's opinion or a summary of it that will be presented to the committee so that we can try to understand. It's like saying the Constitution should be strictly construed, or something.
Okay. You think I'll rise to it?
Really? Yes, I think getting information. Assessment. More like a deposition on the table.
Yes.
Deposition type.
But could also be used, as I understood at the time, for the purposes of quizzing somebody as to what they owed. And I assume that it's going to be used in collections.
I don't think it's very helpful directly. It may have some kind of indirect.
Well, I thought if you sent something out to somebody and said that you were earned this in this amount of time, did you have the following expenses? Take that answer, take that into a court or to the AG, and it seems to me that you got it now.
Well, you still have to go through the process. of the conference and hearing and establishing the warrant and that sort of thing before you can actually proceed to collect. So it really is more important in getting information. And I think what you were referring to, Carl, was the testimony that had to do with interstate collections of the multi-state. Where they wanted to do audits, you know, joint audits.
Perhaps that's true. It just seems to me that we were talking about, at the time, we were talking about musical groups, other kinds of entertainment groups that would come in and leave, and there was no vehicle short of getting an auditor in California or something to go after them, and many times it wasn't a huge amount of money, but that it was a matter of, well, in the strict sense, maybe determining their liability, but
right,
also
setting up the liability.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And having some kind of handle.
Yeah.
That was the real help you get from those things.
Yeah.
The problem with the interstate collections.
But couldn't you, if a worker had worked at Boardman and claimed 140 exemptions and then moved back to Idaho, you found them, if you had the out-of-state or the authority to use the interrogatory, couldn't you write to them and ask them their earnings, write them and ask them the number of actual dependents and exemptions for that year and that sort of thing, and in essence use it true to determine their